Hey guys, thanks for watching Ike Live. It's brought to you by Mystery Tackle Box. Please check them out. They've got a great product. Go to mysterytacklebox.com.
If you use the coupon code IkeLive, you get 50% off
Sweet.
Your first Pro Box. That's
$12.50
for a almost $50 value of baits in this box.
Welcome back. You're watching a brand new Ike Live show here on a cold, chilly, snowy Saturday night. Hope you're having a good time. Want to remind you, we've got a good one for you tonight. We've got David Dudley joining us just a second here in a couple seconds. Want to also remind you, if you're watching over on Facebook, which might be the better option tonight, we might be having a couple little
YouTube
difficulties on IkeLive.com. But if you're watching over on Facebook, like and share the feed. You're going to be entered in a contest to win the famous Ike Live gift bag. Also, you saw the commercial there, Heshy Socks, big supporter of the show. Dave and I are both wearing the socks tonight. If you get a chance, go over to HeshyWear.com. Check out the socks. We've also got some on there that the proceeds go toward the Ike Foundation and help get new kids fishing. So I want you to check that out.
Do they make different sizes?
They don't. It's one size fits all.
Dude. Because mine, like up to my knees. Yeah. I looked at yours at your calf.
No.
I got
no,
like.
No. Well,
I got
because I had them.
Oh, okay.
No,
that's what mine do. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
No, I like the longer sock. Are you a fan of the longer sock? I like the longer sock.
No, because I feel like it's sandpaper and all my leg hair off, like right
okay.
there.
Okay.
Pippi long sock.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like the warmth of a longer
sock. Leg warmers.
Once again, real quick, before we get David on, let me remind you, your feedback is critical tonight. We want to hear from you. Please hit us up on the IMs. If you're watching on social media, hit us up over there at Ike Live Show. We definitely want to put your comments through.
Yes.
Yeah, Brian.
And if anybody's having trouble with the website tonight, Rich is giving us a little feedback saying the website's a little bit rough.
Yeah.
Like Mike said, we're on Facebook and YouTube as well.
Okay, that's
Ike
true.
Live channel, so.
All right. Well, I want to get this show started. Before we do, let me send a very special thank you to our policemen, firemen, EMTs, doctors. Thank you guys for what you do. Also, our military men and women, active and veterans. Thank you guys. It's a crazy world. We really appreciate you. I want to get right to it, Bri, if we can. Without further ado, we have a very special guest on, the one and only David Dudley, joining us here on Ike Live tonight.
Yeah.
David, how you doing?
I am excited, man. I'm doing good here in Lake Eufaula, getting ready to start for the Red Crest. Here in Alabama.
Okay. First things first, let me tell you that I'm looking at you on screen here, and you look good, dude. You look like, honestly, I'm looking at you. You look good. You look in shape. You look, you're glowing.
I weigh 175 pounds right now, and my waistline, like, 32 size pants. I just can't take myself down to 30 because I just think it's, but 32 size pants will fall off of me.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you got a life threatening situation on hand, it's going to motivate you to get yourself in shape, you know?
You could tourniquet my left leg with that 32 waist.
Yeah. Well, you look great. You look super. You look awesome. And in case there's some people watching the show tonight, I know the story, David, but I want you to tell it again. It's pretty amazing. It's a life-changing thing. You found out you had COVID, and then based on that, you found out you had diabetes. Tell us about this and tell us how life-changing it was for you.
So I went in for COVID and they pulled my blood, so when I went in, they go, "Hey, Mr. Dudley, you know you're diabetic?" I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Yeah, you got a 12.1 A1C, which on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is like you are in desperate trouble in the diabetic world."
Yeah.
I was a 12.1, which meant my kidneys were about to fail, going permanently blind, losing my legs, my feet, my hands, like losing my – it was like, oh, my gosh. So,
yeah.
Yes, I got motivated to extremely quick. So I play about 2 hours of racquetball a day. I tell everybody I feel like a freak. Like everything I pick, I haven't had a piece of bread, a grain of rice, or potatoes in 13 weeks now. So like I'm kind of doing the keto thing with a little bit of my twist in it, and it's a life changing thing. And what it here's the thing, like, you don't realize, like, the wake up call. I totally abused like my pancreas, and I put it like this: it's like somebody, an alcoholic, drinking his liver down. And when I say I was a sugarholic, I'm talking consuming, like, it was nothing for me to eat two sleeves of Oreos. And I know we're all like Oreos,
yeah,
right?
Damn.
But I would eat it, never think nothing about it. Damn. And then, like, later on, drinks. And I told my doctor, I said, dude, I'm peeing all the time. He has apologized 1,000 times. Like, David, I'm sorry. He goes, you didn't fit the mold. And, you know, of a diabetic, right?
Right.
I was still in good shape. I felt like I was, you know. I mean, I wasn't bad and very active. And so I'm encouraging people that are listening to the ICO is that don't take your health for granted. Like, if you're peeing a lot or you're doing, like, there's things, like, I don't care how healthy you think they are. And my pancreas just said, suddenly, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a liver. Somebody drinking your liver down.
Yeah.
I destroyed my pancreas. My pancreas said, David, I've had enough. I can't fight for you anymore, and I'm done.
What's the pancreas do? What's its job?
And it's my fault.
Hey, Dave, what's the pancreas even do?
It processes the carbs and sugars.
Oh, okay.
And keeps your blood sugar at a good level.
And how heavy were you when you got...
It said I worked.
How heavy were you when you went in with COVID, Dave?
200.
So you're only down 25 pounds.
25 pounds.
Okay.
That's what the doctor said. He said, I never thought that with you.
Huh.
Like,
right.
And what's happening is COVID is revealing a lot of diabetes now, just like with me. So they're saying it's a correlation, but I think it's more of people like me who are like, you know, I'm good, you know, don't really pay it, don't get checked up. So they go in, they pull their blood, and they're like, oh, you're a diabetic, you're a diabetic, you're a diabetic, you're a diabetic. So people are getting revealed their problems through COVID. And that's why I say COVID saved my life, man.
COVID,
it did. It saved my life.
That's an interesting analogy, because during this time when there's, you know, COVID's destroying the world, it's also saving people, and it saved David for sure. It's interesting, too, because I don't know if there's a correlation between diabetes and fishermen, but you're the third angler that I know that got diabetes sort of younger in life.
That road diet, man, maybe.
I think it's that road diet.
Yeah, and it might be a wake-up call. Do you think this is a wake-up call for a lot of fishermen, David? Because we all we're gypsies. We eat fast food.
Yeah.
We down 5 Gatorades, you know, all day. And
18
and,
inches of Oreos.
You know, Twinkie. I mean, I'm the dude.
Yeah.
My curse, and you know this, Dave and Brian Carpenter. My curse was a little Debbie Honey Buns. Dude, I was a fiend for Honey Buns.
No. Hey, it's not little Debbie.
You
there?
Yeah, you still there, David?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
yeah.
We lost you just for a second. We lost your feed. You're good. We got you now.
Okay. Yeah, no, I said you were talking about little diabetes, the little Debbies. I nicknamed them little diabetes because they're nothing. So I used to joke about that, and darn if it didn't come back and she was like, okay, you making fun of me, little Debbie, calling me little diabetes? Darn it, she put the curse on me, and I got it.
Man.
I used to eat them little diabetes or little Debbie's. Like, I would eat the whole box in a day, like boxes of them.
Yeah.
I'm just a sugar haul, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Our buddy Bob Soley, who's a plumber.
Yeah.
That's when he's plumbing stuff.
Yeah.
With the snake. He's in there to get them little Debbies out of the way.
Right, and the little Debbies out of the pipes. Well, I think it is a wake-up call. And
they're not as tasty.
Yeah, they're not as tasty. If you're watching, if you're a fisherman, a hardcore fisherman like we are, think about your health. You know, take it into account. If there's something off, I think it's a great tip from David. You know, if something's off, if something's not right, go to the doctor. Get checked out because we don't want that to happen. I want to jump back to this rescheduling. And I know you guys were over – in Texas, original location was Lake Palestine. Dude, it got ridiculous in the state of Texas. We saw the pictures, snow, ice, lakes were frozen. The guys decided to move you to Lake Eufaula. Talk a little bit about that. Are you happy with the change? Are you glad you guys are in Alabama?
It, of course, you know, looking at, I think it was Lake Fork. I was seeing pictures of Lake Fork being frozen. Then I saw Lake Palestine being frozen. And, of course, you know, I'm anywhere but there. I tend to say when you're dealing with tournaments where two bites, three bites are going to, you know, do well, I don't want to fish that place. It lends a little bit. Fishing is not luck because it's typically the same people will always come out on top. But when you're dealing with a fishery where you're just begging for a bite, just give me a bite, give me two bites. I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. So I think we're at a lake where I think some fish, the possibility of catching a lot of fish happens. So, yes, I am. I think I made the right call. And here's one interesting thing they said, and I thought it was very interesting, is – think about it this way. The people that were without power, without water, they were living in gymnasiums. All the hotels were booked. And here we are, fishermen, coming into a town in a city where a crisis is going on.
Right.
And it's not right for us to bolt into a city and say, we're going to have a turn.
Good point.
And I think that was a very smart thing.
That's a good point.
It needed to be relocated. And I think they made the excellent call on that, gave that community what would have been our hotels, give them, you know, I say ours, but y'all know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think it was a respectful move. I think that's the word. I'm very respectful for the situation that was going on. Fishing is not that important. Their lives, their, you know, kids, their family, that's more important than us going out there showcasing a bass tournament.
Yeah.
So I think it's a smart move. Lake Eufaula accepted us, and that's where we're at now.
It's a great point. I didn't think about that. We talked about it early in the show, at the opening of the show. And I was a little jaded the other way, but I'm glad you brought that up because that's true. Yep. That's true. You know, there's a lot of fishing's important. It's a livelihood for these guys, but life is way more important, and that's a life or death situation.
You know what's crazy, man? Where this is all happening, it's lower and closer to the equator than the Bahamas are.
It's crazy.
Like Amistad, frozen.
It's crazy. Like, I know. It's hard to fathom.
Wow.
And there's literally there's a Bigfoot sighting on Instagram every day. It's crazy times.
Man. It is crazy
times. Telling you, none of this is real.
You don't think it's real. I want to know, tomorrow is an official practice for you out on Lake Eufaula. Are you going to practice this event any different than you normally practice? This is the championship classic event for MLF. This is a big deal. You know, it's a big, big deal. Are you going to practice any different, David, than you have for, let's say, FLW championships or Bassmaster Classics? Same mindset, different mindset?
Yeah. So with the change that's happened with moving away, and so we only get one day of practice. So coming into a tournament where 300,000 is on the line, I think, and we're in the early spring, you kind of know in the evening time or late afternoon is going to be when the fish are going to be biting, typically anyways, you know, once that water gets up a little bit. So I think tomorrow I'm going to try not to be rushed, but I'm going to try to look at as much of the lake I can by 12 o'clock. And then from 12 till whatever, you know, like till we have to be off the water, kind of try to pick an area and dissect it and see what I can do. But until then, so yes, I am approaching this a little bit different when you have 2 days or 3 days where you can kind of relax, you know, look at the map, figure out a little plan. But when you're only got one day of practice, and yes, this one is going to be different than every championship I've ever fished in the past. One day of practice, and we're starting the very next day. Like, not a day off, not a media day. Right. We're off the water by 6 o'clock, and by 6 o'clock the next morning, we're launching, ready to get the game on. So
Wow. Pete Glusick, I want you to weigh in on that. We've fished a lot of events with short practice periods, but that's ridiculous, Pete. And you know, Lake Eufaula is not a puddle either. You know, you're talking about a lake that stretches a lot of length from the dam all the way up the river. What do you think about David's game plan, Pete?
Well, I did it one time, like the James River, the one I think you won. I was able to practice for 4 hours, just due to situation. I couldn't get there, and I remember going through that practice period like, what in the world am I going to do with 4 hours?
Right.
You know, on a body of water that big. And, you know, so let me ask you that, Dave, like you said, you're going to look around the lake until about noon. What are you going to be looking for in that first half of the day? What's going to be your goal?
Yeah. So naturally you're going to be the lake right now is like what I saw from just riding down the road. It is extremely muddy. So I'm going to be riding from one end of the lake to the other, trying to find some decent color water, right? I want something with a little bit decent color water. But when you know you're already going to be in a tournament where it's very few bites are going to be available, you want to pick an area that you can spend 8 hours in casting. Like, you need to get in an area where it's more important about just figuring out the bass that live in that area. You better figure out how to catch them. And I think my thought process is just looking for an area that I can spend a lot of time in casting. So that's what I'm after. Yeah.
I personally don't like that, not your strategy, but that one day of practice. I think I like for guys, pros, to have a little better, more time to be able to dissect it, man. I personally think I want that out of the tournament and out of the pros, because I want to see them be at their best.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the league does too. You know, they scheduled us for 2 days originally, and due to they have all the marshals flights that they had to rearrange, they had to rearrange booking for hotels. Like, it just was, they couldn't do it for the 2 days. So their heart was for us. Their original plan was for us to have 2 days, but the epidemic that we're in limited us to one day of practice. So they did a great job for what short time they had to make a, you know, audible. Yeah. And, but yeah, I think I'll agree. Yes, for sure. 2 days is going to make for a better show on any 2 days of practice. You put, you know, some of the top anglers out there and you give them 2 days, they're gonna figure something out to have a good show with, you know. But
let me ask you this, Dave. You spent a lot of years on FLW and obviously crushed it over there. This is your first year at MLF. What are your thoughts? I mean, what are the things you like and don't like? What's your experience over there at MLF?
I've told people, many people, this is that It's like playing the game of poker and playing the game of Texas Hold'em. Both games are incredible. So the five bass limit game, it's an awesome game. The MLF style, it's an awesome game.
Yeah.
I can't weigh in. Both games have their strategy, right? The strategy of every 2 pounder counts and the strategy of the biggest five bass. Both of them are great games. It's like the game of chess. Like, it's just it's just two different games. And of course, some people like to play poker and not Texas Hold'em, and some people like Texas, and some people who just love to play the game or cards, it don't matter to them, you know? So I will say it lends a little bit more intensity on the MLF side just by knowing and hearing. It doesn't bother me that much, or really at all. You almost use it to your advantage. And what I mean by that is that you might be in an area that, say, Ike is in, right? Me and him started in a creek. I don't know. So if I know Ike is in that creek and I've done fish for an hour and a half and haven't had a bite, he's had, one bite in an hour and a half, that helps me make a decision on the area that I'm at. If I see the leaderboard like tick, 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 and me and Ike are still sitting down below the, weight. So again, it's just a game. Like, you're using every clue to your advantage. So I like both styles. I got to fish the five bass again this past, late spring, fish some of those tournaments that I get at Lake Erie. I love them. And I can't say one is better than the other. Both games are awesome.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that statement. I fished them both, and I think they're both they both have a place. I know we've got questions piling up, Riz. I want to go to you. And what do we got coming through the IMs for David?
Right. So, David, the Eco Bass Angler on our message board wants to turn the hands of time back just a little bit with you. And he wants to know, one, how did you qualify for your first Bassmaster Classic? And what was the feeling like to know that you were the youngest angler to do it at that point?
Ooh, good question.
I qualified through this was the very first year that what they were called the Bassmaster Invitationals. And so when I say everybody, I'm talking every legend from Roland Martin to, of course, everybody. Like, we had to wait in line. My buddy drove to Birmingham, Alabama, bought a cot. He was the third one to walk in the door, spent the night on the sidewalk to enter me. He entered me and him into this Bassmaster Invitational. So I think I finished third for Angler of the Year at 18 years old against all – everybody you can imagine fished this Invitational. So after the four tournaments, I was third in Angler of the Year. And I think I may have won. I don't remember. But anyways, I think third for Angler of the Year, which qualified me for the Bassmasters Classic. And I fished. I remember strolling. And I look at a 19-year-old now. And when I see him roll through, I'm looking at a 19-year-old and I'm like, dang.
Yeah.
I was that young, oh my gosh, 19 years old and went to the Classic.
Yeah, they're babies.
I mean, I pretty much had diapers on, and when we rolled through that Coliseum and I looked at the Pack Stadium and I'm just, or the, the Coliseum, I was just like, you got to put yourself, you've been doing it for a long time since you were whatever diaper age too, but when you stroll through that college, you're looking around, you're like, yeah, this is what I want. You can imagine a teenager, you're like, yeah, this is it. But I think you knew at a young age, I knew at a young age, we knew what we were meant to do. Yeah. I mean, I told people, it's like, as a kid, they're like, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was like, I'm going to be a professional bass fisherman. And they would, like, good luck with that, It's like little kids saying, I want to be a professional football player. Of course, at a 5-year-old, you're like, okay, buddy. You know, good luck with that. And but you know, Ike, you can. I know you're hearing me because you know it was like, what do you want to do? And it was like, no, I'm going to be not. I hope to be no.
Yeah,
I'm going to be a professional bass fisher. Oh, you know, it was like, and you know, you just it's that confidence. At I knew what I wanted to do. So yes, at 19, I was whatever it was, the first year of invitationals that came out, and I finished third for angler of the year at 18 years old. And then I just turned 19 when I went in, or eight, whatever it was. And then I won my first, remember when it was called the BP Top 100 Spike?
Oh, yeah.
Remember years ago, which is kind of the same term as elite or top or whatever they call it.
I just watched that, David. I just watched that win on the James River.
Yeah. I had a real fall off. I look at myself back then. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So
I remember that tournament was really cool, and you were so young. And who was it? Lynn Dollar. Who has all the Bassmasters?
Yes, yeah, Lynn Dollar on YouTube.
Yep. Yeah, I was over on YouTube watching you win that tournament, and you were giving us all the dialogue on the brand new Zoom Super Fleet. You know?
Yeah.
That's funny, man.
That dates it right there. When the Fluke was new, you know that's a long time ago. You know
oh
what I mean?
God.
That's a long time ago. But it's funny. Yeah. I was laughing as you were saying that because it is such a parallel to my childhood. And, you know, I would go as far to say even – I got it even worse from people because I think, you know, you were from Virginia, so you were right on that line of where it was acceptable to dream that, you know. But the further you got north, you know, you got Maryland and Delaware, then Jersey. By the time you got to Jersey, people looked at you like you had five eyes if you said fishing, let alone I want to fish professionally. So I was laughing with you because I remember it, and I got it from – middle school, all the way through college, all the way, even as I was still attempting to do it, and I was a young, you know, a late teen, early 20s, people still would give me a raft of shit for having that dream.
Hey, I think about this, how naive we were in our thinking. Like, first place back then was $40,000, and if you got a check, it was $1,200. In their right mind, like, you're telling people, oh, you can make a living at fishing? If I place a tournament, I'm going to get $1,200, and my entry fee is $800, and I could bonus about $100. Well, how are you going to pay your bills, you little kid?
Oh, man.
I don't know, but I'm going to...
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Awesome. It's a reality check. But I want to give everybody watching and listening another reality check right now from the great notes that Brian DeCarpenter put together. Over 4 million in career earnings, four-time, not one or two or three, four-time FLW AOY champion, seven FLW wins, two Bassmaster wins, 53 top tens for crying out loud. Listen to me. If you win this Red Crest, it's going to push it to $5 million. That's incredible. From a dream as a kid, people laughing at you, making fun of you, to this, it's pretty incredible, dude. You got to feel proud about that.
I wish I could pull my sleeves up now. No joke. Two goosebumps on my arms are goosebumped up. I mean, that's real passion right there. Just listening to those stats. Yeah. Like, people making fun of you as a kid. You know, of course, my teachers and, you know, reading my Bassmaster magazines in between my history book and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure you got ragged as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
We, you know, it didn't matter because, you know, in life, if you want something bad, we live in the greatest country in the world. If you want something bad enough, it doesn't mean you might not be at the top of your game, or you might not be at the top of whatever you're trying to go to, but at least in this world, or in this country, you're going to have it. You can present yourself an opportunity, and it's how hard you want to work for it, you know? How hard do you – and I think, you know, when we would go, and I'm sure you did the same thing, like when we went fishing in our creek, fishing for minnows, that wasn't playtime to me or you. That wasn't playtime of saying, yeah, I'm just going to go catch the minnows. No, that was us studying the creek, us studying where the fish were at, us learning how to catch a minnow or a creek chub. That was us putting ourselves through college at 6 years old, 7 years old. Something we wanted to do. And even though when we would ride our bicycles to the local pond and just fish our heart out and get chased off by the farmers and all the neighbors, and we'd sneak in there at night throwing buzz bait, I mean, all that was for a goal that we wanted to do. So we live in a great country, and it's nice to be where I'm at. I'm very blessed, no doubt.
I'd agree with that. Riz, I know you're backed up. Give us a couple more. What do you got else? What else you got coming through the IMs?
Yeah, David, Frank Polifrone, Frankie Provolone wants to know, how are you going to manage this year fishing on the MLF and also with your role in the NPFL?
Ooh.
Frankie Sticky Cheese.
Crazy enough, I think there's only one conflict as of right now, right? There's only one conflict with the tournament schedule, and depending on how I do in the tournament, I could, remotely be part of that show too. So it really wasn't much of a deal of handling it. It was just looking at the schedule and saying, could I fit this in? And crazy enough, they didn't conflict anything, so but the one, so that's why I agreed to come on board. And I'm sure a lot of people, I'm a live addict. I mean, I'm like a live addict. And I've said, watching live fishing online, it's not the shows you watch on YouTube or the shows you watch on whatever network that they're on. All that is ESPN SportsCenter highlight films. You don't get to see the true story of Ike struggling like he did, for a little bit. All of a sudden, Ike made one change, and he got to catapult himself, up to the top of the leaderboard. Well, you got to watch that. It's like watching the game of – it doesn't matter. Football, back. You get to watch them, punt four times and not – get 20 yards in any attempt, and then the next thing you know, they go down to the field and score a touchdown. That's the only thing you see. You didn't see them make the adjustments of went from a running game to a passing game to an audible game, and it's the same thing in fishing. You get to watch the whole game. So I'm a crack addict. Not that sounded bad. I'm not a crack addict, but I'm an addict.
Yeah.
It's like a drug to me is what I was trying to refer to. It's a drug watching live because you get to watch the whole game, and hopefully I'll be able to bring some light to the viewers of NPFL, what's really going through their heads, being able to talk them through it.
Yeah.
Well, there was either you or Dudley had that quote that you guys got a lot of heat for, that bass fishing is more addictive than crack cocaine.
Yeah.
Which one of you guys said that? Uh-huh. Who said that?
I may have said it. I don't know. I might have. I don't know.
I know David has compared the Senko to that of crack cocaine
I don't know. But I agree with everything said about the live coverage. And I think you're going to be – like when I look at your personality – with the other guys that are there, with Fat Cat, with Luke. I think you guys are – I cannot wait to watch it. I think you guys are going to have an awesome program. The thing I was the most shocked about, and I just – this is Ike Live, so I'm being honest. The thing I was most shocked about wasn't that you were in that role, but that MLF allowed you to take that role. Did they give you any were you held back at all by them or no?
No, I think I read through our contracts, right? I called called Kathy. I called Boyd Duckett.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, look, I got an opportunity for a job. This is a job. We're in the fishing industry. This is just a job. And I said, hey, I got an opportunity to do this. I said, I will never talk, you know, bad or do any comparisons of leagues, you know, yeah. like whatever, you know, yeah. like this league is, you know, I said, I'm only there to talk fishing. And they said, Dudley, we have no problem with that. No, you know,
yeah,
you know, go ahead. There's, you know, so I think, you know, the main thing is they don't want NPFL's heart is the same way. They're just given an opportunity for people to fish, to learn about fishing.
Yeah.
It's a league started. It's given more people an opportunity to chase a dream and make some major money. And so they had no problem. I called, I took every appropriate step and it's, you know, I don't have anything negative to say about MLF or Bassmasters or NPFL. We're all in this together, man. Yeah. We're creating fishing people out of, you know, high school, college now. And
yeah,
it's awesome. The more people we get involved in the sport, I don't see how it's a detriment. You know,
yeah.
Let's just get people involved.
That's awesome. I'm telling you, that's the second thing I've heard about MLF tonight that I'm like, ooh. Nice call, MLF. I usually don't say that. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised tonight at hearing some good things.
This is like therapy for
you, it's like
Mike.
I know. It's like therapy for
Dave,
me.
Dave, thank you for doing this for
Michael.
Yeah,
thank you for being my therapist tonight. speaking of therapy, I want to bring this up, and this is going to sound strange, but I want to explain myself. On paper, David, you and I look extremely different on paper, you know. Where we grew up fishing, you know, maybe our personalities a little bit are different. We've got some differences, but we've got a lot of things in common too. And I could run down a lot of them. You're huge into kids fishing. You know, you started young. We talked about the comparisons of dreaming about the sport. We've got some great similarities there, but we've got one that's really similar. And I want to flush this out with you is that, you have been one of the, if not the most, one of the most outspoken pros out there. And you've been that way from the beginning. I remember, you probably don't remember this, but I remember meeting you at a Thousand Islands Invitational. That's how long ago it was. I was at like a custard shack, and it was like the only place in Clayton that you could get a meal at night. And we both practiced dark to dark. And I remember meeting you there for the first time, like having a long conversation with you. And you were outspoken then. And you've been that way your whole career. And you know, being outspoken is a good thing and it's a bad thing. You know, I think it's good and we need it in our sport. But you get criticism for it. And I do too. When you look at your career, you know, has that been a good thing for you? Has that been a good thing being outspoken and speaking your mind? And because I'm the same way, you know.
I think, yeah, we both are. And I'm there's times where I wish I would have bit my tongue a little bit more or been a little bit more careful in the way I've said things or my approach. But I've come to accept the fact you're going to have David Dudley fans and you're going to have David Dudley haters, right? Yeah. You're going to have Ike fans. We can't please everybody. And what remember years ago when internet had just started coming out, and I think it was Bass Fishing Homepage used to have this chat room. Remember that chat room?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was in there.
People, this was years ago. Like, yeah. You know, and then people would go in and somebody would say, Dudley, they're talking about you. So, you know, I said something back. Remember the – I know y'all remember the Roland Martin where they thought I was trying to outfish everybody on the whole lake with sight fish, which is so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
So I would go to these chat rooms.
Yep, I remember.
And I would try to defend myself.
Yeah.
And then I remember my mom saying, David, she said, look, she goes – you're wasting your time. Like, you cannot take this personal. You're an outspoken guy.
Yeah.
And like you said, and that's it. We're going to offend people. We are. Here's how stupid this is. You could say, or whatever, you catch a fish and you just, you know, you went Ike, right? The statement. How does that, people will hate you because you got passionate about a fish. How stupid is that? Yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and you're going to have David Dudley fans where I said, where I told Pete, or Roland Martin, Pete Theravella, or whatever, I said, y'all a bunch of babies. I said, go put some diapers on, you know? And then people got all upset at me. And so yes, basically telling you the long story, I've accepted the fact you're going to have David Dudley haters and you're going to have David Dudley fans, right?
Yeah.
I can't please everybody. And I'm not, I got thick skin and people can run their mouth, do what they want. Yeah. And I think you got thick skin and it's okay. Has there been times when I said some stuff? Yeah. Like I was, didn't approach it in the right way. Yeah. Of course, you know, I wish I could retract, but for the most part, I think the approach that you have, the approach that I have, I think it's necessarily, you know, it's tough conversations that you might talk about or I talk about, but it needs to be said. Yeah, like that's how you grow.
Yeah.
You're going to grow that.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Like, you know, I think our sport in general is sort of always a little behind and backwards from mainstream the world, and to have people that are outspoken is good. It's good for the sport. We need it. I'm so glad you are the way you are, and I think a little of it comes, you know, not just from straight haters, but I think a little of it comes from jealousy too. You know, I think, you know, people see success, they see your success, David, and I think they get jealous. I know I've dealt with some of that early in my career. I know you did as well. I can remember there were a few events, you know, where guys are trying to I've been protested before. I know you have, you know, like I'm telling you, a lot of that stemmed from jealousy, you know.
And yeah.
I don't hate the leagues for it. I don't even hate the people that did it. But I'm telling you, that's where it comes from.
Maybe
you know?
A little bit.
Maybe a couple of them. But for the most part, I don't. You know.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree that you're going to, you know, whatever their motive is, it's like, you know, when you are an outspoken guy, right, and you're putting yourself out there to, you know, people's feelings are going to get hurt very easily, some way or another, you know, and if you don't have thick skin, it's typically not best to hang around me because I'm kind of a straight shooter, you know?
Yeah.
And I know it's going to offend people in what we say and how we do it. But again, it goes back to the point. It's like having a tough conversation when, as a dad or a mom, like, you know, you're sitting your child, your kid down and be like, hey, we're going to have a heart to heart talk and it's good to hear, you know, that stuff in a way. And I thought about this when you were talking a second ago, Mike, is that I think the passion that comes through me and you is because me and you started about at the same time. Like, so we've seen the $1,200 checks. We've seen the $1 million checks. We've seen the $500,000 checks. We've seen the evolution of this sport come to play. And since we have seen the whole, not the whole history, but, you know, the major growth of this sport, me and you, we love it. We want to see this sport grow. Yeah. We want to see more anglers get, I don't want to see fighting. I don't want to see bickering. I don't want to see name calling. Just shut it up.
Yeah.
I want to see kids, more kids get involved, and I want to see this sport grow. And I want more opportunities for kids to come away and say, I won $4.2 million. I'm at almost $5 million. I've done, you know, whatever it is. Like, it's just, you know, but I think our passion, when we get frustrated, like you, Mike, and we may hear something, some bickering going on in the league of, you know, the league did this or the league did that. There's bickering. But when we have seen it from the beginning through now and we've lived it, our passion, your passion, my passion is going to be at a greater high. Because why? because we've lived.
Yeah.
We've lived everything there. We've kind of seen everything there is, and nothing new under the sun to us. Right.
Yeah.
So we don't want to see failure in any league. I don't want to see, not that any league's going to fail, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, just, I want to see growth, man. Yeah. Growth is good.
Yeah. Growth's key. Dave, I know you've got a question for David.
I do, Dave. I want to go back to when you're 18, 19 years old. Now, your father, James, was a legend, BFL, FLW guy, and may he rest in peace. I guess you were more, like, even though you were 18 or 19 with the success you had, with having a stud for a dad like you did, do you think you were more like 30 when you were 19 in terms of knowledge and composure on the water?
My dad would answer this. He answered it better than I did, but my dad, I'm just paraphrasing basically what my dad said. In any sport, like, all of your kids are going to be different, right? I've been playing racquetball now for 20 years, right? 20 years of playing racquetball. I play about four times a week, 2 hours a day. And my son, who is now in his seventh month of playing, has already been beating me. He beat me for the first time after 4 months. But the reason I'm saying that is this. My dad answered that question this way. He said, I brought David to a level, and once he hit that level and I knew there was nothing more for me to teach, he said, David took it to a whole nother level that I can't even comprehend. And I look at my son in racquetball. I taught him what I thought I knew, the game of racquetball. But ultimately, it's people grasping. Some people just, I'm not saying I got it. I'm not sitting here saying, but yes, my dad got me started. I fished with him a lot, but ultimately I just got out of high school. It won't like I'm fishing with dad every weekend. I played every sport there was.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's some people got it. And some people don't. And my dad said, I got him here, but he took it. He surpassed me, and he's teaching me now,
So
One more question about your dad. I met him about 16 years ago. I had a small conversation. He wouldn't remember me, but I remembered him. Powerful guy. I guess if you could pass on to people listening, did he give you any life hacks that you can pass on? What I mean by that is, a guy I worked with's dad, son of an immigrant, Polish guy, said he'll never eat at a restaurant until he goes and looks at the back steps and the trash area. If the back steps are clean, nothing, no goo on it, no crate stacked on it, and the trash area is clean, it means the kitchen is clean, and he'll eat there.
Wow.
Now, I'm saying, is your dad, old school guy, does he have anything like that he gave you?
Wow. Oh. Dang.
A good one, Ross, by the way.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to pass down those recipes, man. I tried to.
Man, you throw out a life hack like that, I don't know how I could follow that one up. Now every restaurant I go eat at, I want to be doing.
I had to stop going to Chili's in Deptford.
Yeah. Well, listen, I don't know if you should have just said that. You got to remember, he's in Eufaula, Alabama. You know the restaurants in Eufaula, Alabama.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
You're gonna have a waitress back there booting up.
It's unbelievable. But it is true, what you said about influence. Like, my uncle had an influence on me like that, for sure. And I think when you look at a lot of great athletes, in other sports, you see that same story where, someone pushed them to a certain level, but they took it further themselves, And I think you see that in a lot of great athletes in whatever sport,
Yeah.
So that's.
No, I can't get enough of the life hacks, man. Brian's brother used to drop a couple back when we were kids, man.
Oh, yeah. The old geezer, man.
Bill's
got. We had an old timer used to work for us, and we got a ton of them from old Mark.
Life hacks are great.
Yeah. You never want to be the guinea pig. You don't want to be that guy that put in the first generation Trex deck or Pergo floor. It's all trash now.
Pergo.
Wait, give that stuff about 10 years and it'll be right.
There you have it. Let me remind you, if you're watching over on Facebook, like, share the feed in a contest to win the Ike Live gift bag. Also, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment for David or anything you're hearing on tonight's show, please hit us up on our IM. Also, you could hit us up on our social media feed at Ike Live Show, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Rizzo, what do you got? I know you're stacked up. Brian DeCarpenter, you got a couple too. What do you guys got?
Yeah, I got Daniel Rodriguez on Facebook. David, then this goes back a bit when we were talking about your almost $5 million. David, what have you done with all the money?
Daniel Rodriguez.
Yeah, of course, winning, it takes a lot to participate in the sport. So, yes, number-wise, and I think most professional fishermen will, number-wise, it looks great on paper, but, you know, when you're paying $5,000 entry fees and on average $2,000 to go participate each week and motel, so you're only bonusing maybe $3,000 a week if you get a check.
Yeah.
So numbers on paper look good. Just being honest, it's not, that's, my pockets didn't really go that deep with those tournament winnings. So but what I have invested in is real estate. I got a lot of real estate. I got 16 rental properties. So dang. I actually, we're big into Airbnb. So I got 6 billboards now. So I like mailbox money. You know, I like walking to the mailbox. I want my money working for me. I don't want to be working for my money. So I've done some investment in real estate and rentals, basically.
That's a good place to.
That's awesome. That's
great. Put your money.
Yeah, Brian, what else you got?
Let's see. Scott Easel. Sorry, Scott. On YouTube.
Scott Easel, YouTube. What do you got?
Dave, with the new diet, what are your favorite on the water snacks?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Actually, my favorite, and I would tell anybody this, is that those protein shakes that are, it's Premier Protein. It's 160 calories and it's only 2 carbs and 1 sugar. And basically what I've told people, it's like putting, when you get low on gas in your truck or whatever, you get low on, you just, what do? You just put fuel in. Calories are nothing but fuel, right? So when you're feeling hungry, all you're going to do is put gas, quote unquote gas. So these protein shakes that you can buy, they're called Premier Protein. You can get them at Walmart or Sam's Club, buy them by the cases. They average out at like $1.50 a piece. So think about it. If you went to Chick-fil-A, it's a $9.50 number one meal, right? So if you drink 2 of them, you just had lunch for $3. But money's not the issue. Basically, those protein drinks are what I use on the go. I put them in my work truck, my traveling truck, my boat. Everywhere I'm going to be, they're at my fingertips, and it's just just fuel. And I look at protein shakes as fuel. So besides that, I do eat a lot of meats and salads, and I'm kind of weird. I kind of eat like, no, I don't even know how to say it, but I'm kind of a gay eater, you know. Now I don't eat any, you know, sugars or carbs or any of that. I'm on the keto thing. So protein shakes, I would encourage everybody. They don't sponsor me or nothing, but it sure does help getting calories in your body so you can make it to supper or you can just all day. There's been countless days where I just drank protein shakes and got 1500 calories of shakes and I'm fine. You don't need all that carbs and sugars and fats anyways. So yes, protein shakes, big fan of them.
There you go. Rizzo, I know you're backed up too. Give us a couple good ones. What do you got?
So David, the Buck Stronghold Gentleman Bronco wants to know, in your opinion, who has a better beard, Luke Duncan or Paul Benson?
Ooh.
Dang, I'm going to have to go with Luke.
Yeah, Luke's pretty strong.
I looked at him. I looked at him hard the other day, and Paul had a few crumbs in his and a little bit, and Luke had a lot more gray in his beard. So I take gray as wisdom. So I'm going to have to go with Luke and count Paul out on this one. Paul, I love you, but I'm
those Cheetos. Player.
Those Cheetos that were stuck in your beard, I'm going to have to go with Luke.
And the big boy wants to know, David, when you're not tournament fishing, how often are you fishing? Are you fishing every day? Is it twice a day? How often do you get out?
The last cast I made was at Lake Erie. So I was cutting my smallmouth baits off in February.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a while.
Bass fish. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a while ago. That actually leads into I was checking Facebook and Instagram while you were answering that, and I've got one from each I want to hit. And this goes into this same topic. And this one's from Instagram from Ed Sekula. And Ed wants to know, he's heard Jacob Prosnick say that you're a better saltwater fisherman than you are a freshwater fisherman. Ed wants to know, is that true?
I love my saltwater fishing. I know I've seen a lot of your posts now with stripers, you know, and a lot of your saltwater stuff from this year. I love saltwater fishing. That is my passion. Yeah. Like, I love having – I'm not prejudiced. And when you're a non-prejudiced fisherman and you're out in the saltwater, it is game on. So I don't know if I could say I'm a better fisherman, but I can answer it this way. I enjoy saltwater fishing more than I do bass fishing.
Wow.
Bass fishing frustrates the snot out of me. It's like I love the game of chess, but I hate that game. I hate it with I mean, it just makes me so frustrating and mad, but I just bass fishing, and you know it. It takes us it's like we're bipolar. Yeah. You know, it's like we're bipolar. At the end of the week, we go from these roller coaster of emotions to highs and lows. And no, saltwater is just like, yeah, let's go out and catch 100 speckled trout. Let's go out and catch 200 stripers. They're schooling out there underneath the seagulls. Let's go drift the eel around and catch, you know, some giant stripers. Let's go amberjack fishing. Let's go flounder fishing, which I love to do. You know, it's just – anyway, so my passion is saltwater, but, you know, bass fishing, of course, is competitive, but darn if it don't frustrate the snot out of me.
I'd agree. I'd agree with that. And I'd like anything that pulls back. But an interesting fact is that you'll hardly ever meet a saltwater guy that became a bass fisherman, but you meet a lot of saltwater guys that became saltwater anglers. They used to bass fish, and they never looked back.
Yep.
Dude, I cannot tell you how many saltwater guys I've met that were like, yeah, I used to bass fish, and then I saltwater fish, and I don't bass fish anymore. And I'm like, I get it.
In Florida between the snook and the tarpon.
That's what I mean. Dude, would you ever bass fish again?
I probably would.
You might sprinkle a little
in. Just out of convenience, but dude, come on.
It's crazy. I know.
That's an awesome analogy. I'm just shaking my head agreeing with you. Like, I'm trying to think, have I ever heard something? Nope, I've never heard that before. It's always that way. That's an awesome thought, man.
Yeah. It's so true. And then over on Facebook, this is not really a question. It's just a comment. And this one's from Steve Pellegrino. And Steve says, David, you're the only person that has an open mouth in your photos more than Mike. So I guess you open your mouth a lot in pictures of
The king of the mouth opening is Scott Martin.
Scott Martin.
Single, no doubt. Scott Martin, I don't know how, you know, millions of insects ain't flying in that mouth. I know me and Ike do it a little bit, but I don't know if you went back and I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and look at my Instagram to see if I have my mouth open a lot. But I didn't think I did.
I had a note here, and I want to bring this up because I think this is an interesting topic for a lot of people watching and listening. I have a note from Brian DeCarpenter that coon hunting is like it's – you love it. It's on the top of your list of things to do. Talk a little bit about that because in this part of the world, we don't do it, but – I want to hear your thoughts on it. It sounds interesting.
It is. Coon hunting is something
that I've done since before I could drive. My mom and dad used to drop me off at this older guy's house, and he would just, we actually used lanterns back then, not lights, lanterns.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
So we would walk around with our lanterns and with the dogs, and they would go around and find the coons for us and put them up the tree. But coon hunting to me, you talk about me, you know, when I walk away from fishing after a season, it's kind of done. You know, everybody's got their different opinions. You know, some people fish all the time. I was actually talking to Todd Faircloth about that tonight. But coon hunting is my deep breath, right? It's and it's just exercise. Like, really, it's just decompressing to me. You go out and you go out with friends and you just walk around and you talk about life. It's a decompression to me, and it's a fun sport. It's a fun experience in hunting. So yes, coon hunting is been a huge part of my life for the longest time. So it's just a deep breath for me.
Hey, Dave, you got to forgive me, because where you're at, I know everyone knows, but I don't know. Like, what do you do with the raccoon after you kill it?
The hide market is not as good as it's been in the last 5 years. Skin them out. You can sell them, you know, of course, sell them to the fur market. We've actually eaten, you know, a few of the coons. The first time we did it, remember that show that was called Fear Factor. Remember Fear Factor?
Oh, yeah.
We skinned a coon out, and we had a coon that we skinned completely out, looked like a naked, of course, like a naked giant rat, right? Even skin his tail out. So we went, did something that day. The very next day, I had a bunch of college kids over at the house and said, y'all want to do some Fear Factor? Like, yeah. So we grabbed the coon, and we had a bonfire going. I said, all right. I said, whoever eats the most of this coon wins. So we go and throw the thing directly in the fire. And I'll never forget watching the intestines boiling inside of him, and where we shot him, you could see the liquids oozing out of the hole in his stomach. Well, so we threw it on the table, black, charred as you can get, and we started cutting in on this thing. And even some of my kids ate it. I don't care. My kids are awesome eaters. So we started cutting. So it came down to me and this dude, and we were just mauling on this coon. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have any more muscle left on this coon. I sliced open his guts, right? And there's the intestines, the heart, the liver, the everything. And I go, all right, buddy. I said, we ain't got nothing left. I said, let's go. He reaches down and cuts off a big chunk, like a 50-cent piece, part of the liver. And he goes, thump. He threw it in his mouth and swallowed it. I said, you win. I lose. I wasn't even about to go there. Oh. I was just going to see if he did it. But I didn't mind eating the coon. You know, I mean, it was just like a dark muscle. It really had so much burnt taste to it. I couldn't taste it. But he when he sliced a piece of that liver off and threw it in his mouth, I was like, yep, you win, buddy. I ain't even attempting that.
Now, are you glad that no one could have, like, recorded your Serbian picnic? Or, like, do you wish you had video footage of it, man?
That would have been good. That would have went viral.
Oh, yeah. That's like, moments in life you have with friends and family. I mean, really, there's nothing wrong with eating coon. I mean, I don't know why it's such a negative thing. It's not a normal thing that you eat, but
it's meat.
You know, third world countries, and they would never snub their nose at a coon, you know,
especially the organ meat, the heart and the liver. That's where all the vitamins are.
Actually, because of Steve Ranelli, the meat eater,
yeah,
I kept seeing him rave about eating hearts. So this year I killed a deer one day, and I took the heart out and I put it on Instagram. I just ate the raw heart, just deer heart, and it was awesome.
God,
like,
dang,
dude. Like sushi style.
Yeah. Really? That's interesting.
Yeah,
what?
Absolutely.
Can you give us a taste comparison? Is there something?
Yeah, I thought it was going to have a high iron taste, and it really wasn't. There's so much filtration through the heart that after the kill, it was like, I'm not going to, it was very smooth. So because the heart filters so much blood, it was like eating silk. It wasn't grained muscle. Okay. It was like that eating a hard piece of silk, or not hard, but a firm piece of silk. It was a silky muscle, not a grained muscle. So it really, I mean, I'll never throw another heart away again because of Meat Eater, Steve Ranelli. So yes, heart is going to be plucked out. I wish I never would have thrown away the hearts.
For those of you that don't know who he's talking about with Steve Ranelli, you got to go to YouTube, Steve Ranelli grizzly attack story. Oh my God. Him and his buddies camp. Dave, you know the story I'm talking about? Him and his buddies camp. One of them took a ride on the back of a grizzly. one of the most rad guy stories ever, dude.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He's an awesome dude.
Great channel. I tell you what, just after those last two stories, my appreciation for you, David, has gone up like five notches. I'm just telling you. I thought you were hardcore before, but I'm on a whole next level.
He's eating raw heart, dude.
That's hardcore.
I know. I feel like a puss.
That's hardcore.
I know. I think when I eat a raw clam, I'm like a man in the woods.
I know. Yeah.
I'm a man of the forest.
Yeah, I feel like I totally wasted my day. I didn't.
Yeah. I know.
You didn't kill a deer and eat its beating heart.
Nothing. No.
It's gross. You had Wendy's. Fucking gross, bro.
I didn't have Wendy's, but.
I know we're not going to keep you all night. You've got a big day ahead of you, but I want to sort of end this by talking about what's next, because you know we talk to a lot of guys on the show, and the what next is pretty easy to see, right? You know, a guy says, the next for me is I want to win this tournament, or the next for me is I'm going to retire. The next, but you've got this track record where you've kind of done everything in the sport. You've accomplished a lot of what people aspire to accomplish in their career. So, you know, I'm looking at your announcing gig. I'm looking at some of these other things. I'm looking at your YouTube. You know, you're really pushing into this world. But what's next, Dave? What do you got coming?
Wow. Yeah, I think if you are a competitive guy, whatever is in front of you is what the next thing is going to be.
Yeah.
But I think if I was to put a finger on what I think would the next goal, I've won the FLW championships, I've won Angler of the Years, I've won Bassmaster tournaments, I've won FLW tournaments, I've won Ultimate Match Fishing, I've done some live commentary. You know, truly, I think I want some titles in this league. You know, I want titles in the Major League Fishing League. You know, I think, you know, it gives me something to strive for. You know, it's like, so I'm going to say right now, the present of where I'm at, just like, I think if you're competitive enough, whatever at the moment, and you're always about fish the moment, you know, I think whatever is in front of you at the moment, that's what I aspire to accomplish. And Angler of the Year comes that way too. People, I don't enter the season. Like, I got four Angler of the Year titles, but I don't enter my season going, you know, what's your goal? I'm going to win Angler of the Year. You know, I mean, everybody wants to win Angler of the Year, but that's not my focus. Right. My focus is not Angler of the Year. My focus is really not about winning that tournament at that moment. At that moment, day one, like when we start it tomorrow, I want to be the best there can be in that day, right? Angler of the Year is going to fall in your lap, right? And when I say fall in your lap, if you focus every day in the course of the season and you like narrow that focus to a streamline, and this is a cool, interesting thing, like a dove's eye, right? A dove's eye can only focus on one thing at a time. And there was this song that this girl wrote. And actually she was a Christian writer, and she was praying. She was like, give me dove's eyes. And I was like, what the heck? Why would you ask for dove's eyes?
Yeah.
So I got to reading about it. And a dove's eye can only focus on one thing at a time. And what she was saying was she wanted to focus on God and only God.
That's poetic.
And that's what she wanted, her eyes. But I correlate that even into fishing, that if you focus your attention minute by minute, second by second, hour by fishing the moment. Like you're so big about, if you focus on that, angler of the year is going to fall in your lap. You know, the tournament win is going to fall into your lap. So I of course I would love to, you know, what do I kind of want? I want some titles over here. You know, I've got titles in both, you know, kind of both leagues, and I wouldn't mind some titles over here, but you know, I think my heart and is as well as Ike, you know, ultimately we want to see this sport grow. We want to see this sport go to higher levels. You know, we want to see as many kids get jacked up about going catching creek chubs in the bottom of a creek, you know, in somebody's backyard. So, you know, I want to see that passion going for the kids.
I want to see more kids with the lanterns at nighttime killing raccoons.
Me too. Hey, kids in the outdoors.
With Uncle Eddie at the end of the block, whatever his name was.
Kids in the outdoors are a good thing.
I'm going to tell you one more funny story. Here's a funny story talking about lanterns. So these red suckers and white suckers as kids, well, they still do it. They run up they come out of the major rivers and run up these little tiny creeks to go spawn like salmon. You've probably done it, or you know about it, Ike. So these suckers come up. So we used to carry lanterns and we would take frog gigs and we would wade in these creeks and gig these suckers, and these folks would make fish cakes out of them. So I was walking up the creek and I'm like, I got my eye centered on one of them and he's going up the creek. Well, he does a U-turn and I got my frog gig ready, buddy. I'm going to spear him right in the skull. He starts coming down the creek. And I kind of got my legs wide open, you know, and I'm holding the lantern in my left hand and spear in the right hand. And just as he got ready to go between my legs, he did that little, you know, like quick movement. So I didn't judge it right. So I kind of went backwards to try to get him between my legs. Well, the current pulled my frog gig faster. And when I jammed down, I went straight into top of my foot and not the bottom of my foot.
Hold on, Dave, it went through?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It went between the webbing of my big toe, and, you know, like that little webbing area.
Yeah.
And my waders are filling up with water, right? And I'm freaking out. Like, I'm like, my best friend's name is Pee Wee. I said, Pee Wee, I said, I done gigged my foot. He's like, what? I said, I gigged my foot. And my spear is sitting there in my foot. And all of a sudden, I hit the panic button. And I jerked the frog gig out. And you know, it's got like huge barbs on it.
Oh my
God. I get up there and we pull my waders off. And when we pull my waders off, I looked down that night when I got home. I could take a Q-tip from the top of my foot down through the bottom of my foot.
Dang.
And I was playing baseball at the time. And when I was playing, and I was so embarrassed to tell, and I was a starting center fielder. I was so embarrassed to tell my coach what I did. I told him I sprained my ankle, and I didn't tell people that I gigged my foot because that was kind of embarrassing. I had to sit out for a couple games.
You would never live that down, Dave, if you admitted to spearing yourself. That's it. Yeah.
And I got that spear. Pee-wee, he actually had that spear, and he goes, Dudley. He goes, you remember us going gigging? Of course. He goes, here's that spear. I jerked it out of his hand. It's now in my trophy room.
Wow.
In my house.
Yes, memorabilia.
Spear to this day. Yeah.
Wow.
I respect that.
It's crazy when you tell a story like that.
Yes.
If you've experienced the outdoors, dude, I was living it. Like as you were describing that, I felt the pain as you were gigging your own foot, and I was like, oh, I just started shriveling up. It's like seeing. You ever go through Instagram or social media and you see a picture of a treble hook in somebody's finger?
Oh, yeah.
You feel the pain every time you see the picture. I just felt that gig go through my
foot. I'm going to tell you what I was thinking. I wish Dave was living up here and he was a part of our inner circle. So as when he called me, the ringtone would be, Pee-wee, I done gigged my foot. Like that'd be the ringer. Like that'd be his voice. I would take it right off this, dude.
Be awesome ringtone.
We got it now.
We got it now. Man, I got to tell you, so many pieces of amazing information tonight. The stories were so good. The piece about Dove's Eye, about one day at a time, dude, I think that's why you won 4 AOYs, and I think that's why you're probably going to win another one. You know, that focus, Pete, is, you know, there's a lot of great anglers out there, but there's not a lot that have that kind of focus to take a day at a time, you know, and hats off to you for that. Real quick, I just have one other question. You've accomplished so much. I know MLF titles are something in your future. Is a Bass, B-A-S-S-A-O-Y, and B-A-S-S Classic something you might venture back to Bass eventually and try to conquer those as well?
Just got goosebumps on my arms. Does that answer your question? Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I don't know if there's an angler out there that has accomplished. So let's think about this. Of course, you're a classic winner. Has there been a fisherman who has won an elite style tournament of Bassmaster, you know, the top level?
Yeah.
And has an AOI title and has a classic title now, who also has an AOI title on FLW win and FLW championship. That is the ultimate grand slam. Will we see that in our sport? I'm going to throw that at you. Will we see, or it might be, but will we see somebody who has a grand slam? Mm. The only person I'm thinking maybe is Davey Height. Maybe? Does he have an AOI title?
I don't know. Pete, can you be
Height's won two AOIs at Bassmaster.
Yeah.
What about on FLW?
I'm not sure. What about Fritz? What about Hackney? He comes to mind.
I know Hackney's got an FLW championship. Hackney's got a AOI, doesn't he, FLW, or no? Or no, just the championship. That's a great question. That might be Ken Duke trivia.
Yeah, that's a Ken Duke question. Yeah.
Hackney had a pot of skunk apes scoping him, too.
I saw that picture. Oh, yeah. I did see that. Yeah.
Kumar doubled down. He just posted another one about a half hour ago.
Did he?
See what I opened the door to? Now they can do it without shame.
I know.
That's all right.
Shame anybody that believes in Bigfoot. We're going to shame them.
No.
Oh, no. We believe it, too.
He's just saying words. Which two anglers have the most FLW Cup appearances?
Well, I would say David Dudley.
And?
Scott Martin.
Duds? Who you got?
Me and Andy Morgan.
That's correct.
Wow.
That's 21.
That's a lot.
Most
ever in the history of the world. David, before we let you go, do me a favor. Give me a plug. There's people watching. If somebody's under a rock, they haven't already been following you. How can they follow you on social media and YouTube? What can they go to?
All right. So if you YouTube, I'm David Dudley Outdoors. And Instagram, David Dudley Fish, and on Facebook, David Dudley. So that's me on the social media world.
There you have it. Well, Brian, what do you got?
I got a couple more, dude.
Oh, hit me. What do you got?
Ken Duke had sent me some stuff earlier when we were in scramble mode. Just getting to it now. Who has the most cumulative weight in Forest Wood Cup history?
Cumulative weight
in
cup history.
Yeah, 469 pounds plus. Go ahead, Dave.
Dave Dudley or Andy Morgan?
I would have to guess me or Andy, but I, you know, if we went to a lake where I don't know. I've been to, so I don't know.
It's you, Dudley.
I'm gonna say me.
Yep.
How about that?
Wow.
Yeah, and Thrift is second, just 3 pounds back. Although he's fished it 8 less times.
Wow.
Well, what's sad?
What's
sad is I'll be the top of that stat the rest of my life.
Forever.
Yep.
Forever.
That's right.
Right. If you think about it, right? Me and Andy will have that title the rest of our life.
Weighed in the most fish in Forestwood Cup history?
Yeah. Because there's no more Forestwood Cups anymore.
Right. Youngest angler to ever win a BASS tournament.
Oh,
yeah.
Got that one.
James Earl.
And there you go.
There you go. Ken Duke, thank you for all those historical pieces of tidbits. They were great.
Skunk apes.
David, thank you for coming on the show. Dude, we had so much fun catching up with you. And wishing you a lot of luck this week, man. One day of practice is rough, but you're kind of angler that can do it. Wish you a lot of luck in this tournament and the whole season. We're going to be following you and watching you. Wish you a lot of luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll get together again soon.
Yes, sir. There you have it. David Dudley, everybody, on Ike Live.
Eyes like a dove.
Dude, that was awesome.
Man. Or Vlad the Impaler.
Dude,
that was great, man.
Pete, you got to admit, Pete, that was the analogy of taking one day at a time is something that is such an important thing, and we hardly ever talk about it like that.
Yep. And you found folks, he's very cerebral and just super smart about the way that he thinks about things. He always was in his assessment of his fishing, and you know, you could see it. I can't tell what I'm more, you know, freaked out about, though, was him, you know, cooking a raccoon and watching the stuff boil out through the hole.
Best story we've ever had.
That's probably
one of the better ones.
It's probably the best story.
Doug's is still here listening, by the way.
Or I can't imagine. I mean, I've seen those frog gigs before. The barbs on them are huge.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine ripping that out of your own foot.
No.
That is a man's man.
Pete, by the way, somebody suggested you do that. You eat the guts of that squirrel that's been tearing up your boat since.
That's right. You having a squirrel issue still, aren't you, Pete? Yeah,
you know, I'm grossed out by all the talk here, but I, you know, the hostility I have for that squirrel, I'm in.
Dave, you got to eat his heart, dude.
Dave, Pete's been getting his ass beat by a squirrel.
He's getting into my boat. He's biting and ripping and tearing at my brand new sheets.
Why don't you just put a squirrel trap underneath the cover?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to be a little bit more harsh than that.
Well, no, then you fill a trash can full of water and you throw the whole cage in the trash can.
It has nothing to do with my seats, honestly. He's grabbing stuff, and then he decides he wants to eat in my boat. He goes under the cover there and eats.
Probably Riz after all night drinking. going home to the wrong house.
That's what I would
do. He's grabbing stuff. He's stripping his fucking teeth at me. He's snapping at me.
That was great. Man, but you know what?
That was a great interview, man.
Yeah, dude.
I think about that comment, and I remember it now. It was David because he was saying, like, bass fishing is more addictive than crack cocaine. And he was saying it in the manner that he loved fishing.
Yeah.
And it got construed completely sideways on him. And it took a negative heat in the media. But that was,
whatever.
You know, that was him way back when.
Yeah.
Hey, when he brought up the bass fishing homepage, my call sign was Big Head Fast Boat. It was, dude. It was Big Head Fast Boat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you get in on that?
Yeah, I was deep in it.
It's awesome. Did you ever brawl with anybody?
I don't think so, man. No, I don't remember that. I got. Yeah. I used to do that in the law enforcement forums. I got thrown out of most of them.
Did you really?
I got banned, and they ban you. And then I just get a different email and get a new account.
Jeez.
It's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that was an amazing segment with David Dudley. Bri, I know you got to agree.
Oh, dude, it's fantastic.
It was a really, really good one.
I got times written down.
Oh, dude.
For clips to pull.
Oh, definitely some classics there.
We have Crack Addict at the 111 mark. Gay Eater at 130.
Yeah.
Coon Hunting at 138.
Yeah.
Dove's Eyes at 147. And Pee Wee. Gigged my foot.
Yeah. We could actually pull that and use that as a ringtone.
He was like, Pee Wee.
Yeah, which would be great.
I love that story.
Dudley was the best.
He was the best. What a great interview. Listen to me. Hang in there because Bride of Carpenter, we're going to come back for one more segment.
Let's go.
And when we do that, we're going to open a mystery tackle box. We're going to announce the winner of the like and share contest. And we might actually let somebody in or maybe let a random person in.
Yeah.
So keep watching. We might let you in the chat with us. So,
yeah, Rich, throw the Zoom link up.
Yeah, throw the Zoom link up, Rich. And in this third segment, we might let a couple people in, hang out with us, have a beer. And I hope you're having a great Saturday night. Hang in there with us. One more segment of Ike Life.
4.5-inch drop shot worm. Bama bug. Finesse jig, PB&J. Give me something hard. Hey, KVD here. I didn't always know this much about fishing. It's a 4-aught EWG worm hook. In fact, there was a time when I couldn't tell the difference between a jerkbait and a stickbait. But then I signed up for Mystery Tackle Box, the original monthly tackle subscription. And now I know more about fishing than I do about Calculus.
And he knows a lot about Calculus.
Plus, I get amazing extras, like free fishing magazines. October 2016. Featured article, 4 places to throw a frog. Exclusive decals. Zombie bass. And how-to videos for all the great baits I receive. How to tune a crankbait. Is that underwater footage I smell?
I got goosebumps.
So if you're looking to develop enhanced fishing abilities like me, or you just like getting new tackle every month, go to MysteryTackleBox.com and get your box today. Ooh, live minnows. Is it lunchtime already? Nature's candy.
Oh. Is he in my pocket?
This time of year, I definitely recommend putting a little bit of this on your soft plastics, too. There he is. Another one. Next cast. And that would be number 6. I'm addicted. I'll admit it. I'm straight addicted.
It might be bigger.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's such a healthy fish. Look at the size. Put a little liquid mayhem on your crappy jig and look where the stripers get it.
You can't even see it, man.
That might be a keeper.
This is your tackle. Not that kind of tackle. You use it to catch this, or this, or this. You also use this, and that, and these. This is your environment. So is this. You love it, live for it, but it will turn this into that. This is the Flambeau Z-Rust Max Tuftainer Series. These are fully infused with exclusive Z-Rust VCI anti-corrosion technology. This is a U.S. naval battleship. The same Z-Rust technology used here has been used on those to protect advanced weapon systems from corrosion in conditions like these. For the fish, it's invisible, odorless, tasteless. And for you, it's FDA-safe anti-rust protection for a minimum of 5 years. This is the next level of tackle management. Not that kind of management. This is the Flambeau legacy of tackle systems. What's your tackle worth?
It's more than who you are. It's who you're with. And it's more than what you do. It's where you do it. Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey.